Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training.
Counterintuitive way to figure out what you love based on how much difficult things or annoying things you do in order to do it. Like that's a really interesting way to show somebody their passion. I always tell authors, you have two audiences, the publisher and the person who buys the book. You're selling to both people. I'll use humor to exaggerate it so it's easy to see and it's easy to accept. Oh man, he's right. That's one of the things that I try to do with my books is I'm like, okay, how is the audience going to react to this? How's a corporate audience going to react to this? Have I seen a million books about overthinking? You know, have they had this position? What's my angle on it?
Hey, Chandler Volt here, and joining me today, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. John Acuff. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He's written a bunch of books. 9 is the current count. By the time you're listening to this, there will probably be additional books added to that count. I feel like, so this is the second time we've had John on the show, and he's published 2 books since the last time, I think. And when we're talking before this interview, is already working on the next one. So I'm like, we can't even keep up with episodes. And that episode was probably a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Dude, I have a book coming out in September. Like there's a book already done coming out. Book number 10 is done. Like it's already locked and loaded. Comes out in September. I'm talking about book number 11. That's the one I'm writing right now. So yeah, I want to be prolific. I decided, you know, probably, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, I want to be a prolific, profitable writer.
In that prolific, order. Profitable writer. Yeah, okay.
In that order. Now. So, okay. You know, I read a great book, Dickens and Prince, which was brilliant. One of my top 5 books from last year. And it compared the creative process of Charles Dickens with, and it was so, so fascinating. Prince, at the time of his death, had 5,000 to 7,000 produced songs in his vault. He could release a 10-song album every 6 months for something like 300 years. So he was, and they said he was too prolific to worry about perfectionism. And that's a dope idea. So that's what I'm like, okay, how do I be prolific? If I want to be a prolific writer, then that takes certain things and I'm going to lean into that. And it means I can't do other things. So what happens for me is where I get trapped is I talk to dudes like some of our friends who aren't writers and they love running businesses. Like they're a CEO, they're entrepreneur, and they hate writing. And they'll say to me like, why do you write so much? Like, ugh. And I'm thinking about them like, why do you have 400 employees, like, like mustaches and healthcare. Like that seems really hard. And so I think you always have to take advice from people who love the same things you love. Because if you're not careful, you'll take advice from people who hate what you love. And
Man, that's good. Dropping knowledge. We're not even into the intro yet. And we're dropping knowledge.
No, it's not. What are we waiting for? What are we, like, why are we dillying or dallying? Let's just do it.
No time for the dilly dally. So I'll just quickly plug, just so people know, I mean, Soundtracks is one of his recent books. Yep. He's just been absolutely killing it. His most recent book, Beyond That, All It Takes Is a Goal. He's got a podcast called the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast. He's a speaker all over the place. I mean, just incredible guy, really funny. I want to start with this. It's funny, you kind of beat me to the punch here because I literally had in my notes, question, how are you such a prolific content creator? Yeah. It's like literally the word prolific is in there. and I guess funny. That is what you're focused on. So how do you do it?
Well, I mean, I do it a number of different ways, but one is I always tell people I don't believe in writer's block. I believe in idea bank. If you can't write, it just means your idea bank is empty. So I'm really deliberate about collecting ideas. Like I'm really deliberate. So I'll give you an example. Last week, I had coffee with Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner. So the commissioner of SEC, a brilliant guy. And he's 12 years ahead of me in life. And so I was there to take a bunch of notes, but he mentioned in our conversation that his wife challenged him one time and was like, why don't you make a list of the executives you want to go learn from, and then just approach them and ask if you can come. And so he started to do that. And he'll find somebody and go, they're in an industry I'm not in. They have a knowledge I don't have. And he'll just reach out and connect and go, hey, can I fly out to where you are and spend 60 minutes asking you questions? And he's taking notes. Like, he'll send me things he took from our coffee and go, hey, here's three things that I took away from that idea. That's the kind of learner I want to be. So I think a lot of writing is being willing to learn. The other day I spoke at an event and the sales director said in his speech, hey, remember guys, these are the commitments we made. He didn't use the word target because target isn't as hardcore. Mm-hmm. He said, these are our commitments. These are the commitments we made for our sales this year. Like, and I wrote that down. I was like, oh, he was really deliberate to use the word commitment. That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Or I'll write down like business days is a funny way to say days. Like if I was going to write a sentence someday, maybe a year from now, and I wanted to be like, it took me 9 days to do that. It would be funnier to go, it took 9 business days to accomplish that. Like that one word makes the idea funnier. And so I'm collecting. And then a lot of it is like, I write by hand. So I write like long form by hand because I feel it's easier for me to be kind of loose when it's.
Are you talking like pen and paper? You're talking
pen and paper. Yeah. Pen and paper.
You're kidding.
Yeah. No. So I write. And then when I type it into the computer, that's the first edit. So as I'm reading it, I'm like, that wasn't a good enough sentence. So I'm just trying to get the idea down in that first round. The words aren't right. The words won't be right for a long time. But if I can capture the idea, then I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Or I'll go, I took a long time to get there. Why don't I say it a different way? And so, yeah, like I write, like today I wrote some for the new book and it was in my journal and I was writing in the journal and I was writing, writing. And then eventually at another time, I'll take that journal, open it up and type it in, but I'll be translating it into a second draft just from doing that. Because for me, it's harder for me to have creative freedom in a computer than it is a notebook. I can cross it off. It just feels different.
So hold up, you write your books by hand.
Yeah. And then I type them in and then if I showed you, like I'll show you a notebook right now. I mean, some people see this on video, but like here, this is like this, you know, this, and it says at the top book, like the word it says at the top is book. And like, here's some more. And like, you know, like here's some more. So like, yeah, that's how I'm doing it. And I'll go, okay, what's the topic I want to talk about, think about. And then as I put it into the document, it gets better. But I even like to, I edit by paper. So when I've got it in there and it's a second or third round,
I print it out.
I'm marking it up. That's just easier for me. So I'm pretty old school that way. Now that I say it out loud, like, yeah, that is, I feel like I'm carving things in wood with my process, but I would say if somebody said to me, but that's so slow, I'd go, oh, I'm sorry. Have you written 10 books? If you've written 100, I'll hear that feedback. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't written at least 10, it's not slow. It's actually turns out to be really fast for the way I write.
It's what's the Chinese proverbs? What is it? Slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Yeah. For me, it works.
So are you writing full pages handwritten, or is it kind of like bullet point story?
No, full pages. I'm doing everything. First, like I'll draw it.
I just can't get over this.
No, dude. Like I'll draw it. Most of the time when I'm trying to figure out the idea, I draw it. I sketch it out. I'm like this piece plus this piece. It shapes. It's like what happens when this happens. And so I'm kind of trying to sketch out the idea. So like with soundtracks, I'm like, okay, well, when people have thoughts, how should they process them? What does that look? And if I can sketch it out, it's usually a strong enough idea. Like if I can't do a simple sketch, it's too complicated and it's going to be complicated for the reader. So then when I like, what I'll do is I'll give myself assignments. So I'll say today I'm going to write about the Porsche story and see where that goes. Like I'm going to see where that goes because I think it goes somewhere interesting. And I know the key things I want to cover. I want to cover this Porsche I saw or this conversation I had or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so I have some of the highlights that I'm going to write about in my note, and then I'll write it. But it'll always go better places than I could have planned because that's what writing does is new ideas show up in the moment.
So you're saying, hey, I've got my idea bank. I love that quote of, I don't believe in writer's block. I believe in idea bankruptcy. So is that in a note on your phone somewhere or something? And just as you come up with stuff and you've got kind of the idea bank?
Yeah. So like I know, and I've done it a bunch of different ways. I usually just go through seasons where I'm like, it's all notebook, but that's a hassle. I sometimes will lose ideas and I'm like, okay, let me put them in my phone. But like, I'm looking at my phone right now and like, okay. So like this one says, add to the essay about that you wrote that you should feel overwhelmed. So I'm writing a book about anxiety right now. And one of my concepts is, yeah, we should feel anxious. We as a culture have decided, I never want to feel sad or anxious or anything. And the second I do, something must be wrong and I have to fix it immediately. And like, no, that's one of the human emotions. Like you should be okay to have that one, to expect that one. So like that note will help me. And I said like, okay, remember the conversation you had with Chip about this, you know, or like, this one just says book, what are you willing to put up with? Because I think it's a really interesting idea. Everybody always goes like, find your passion. But I think the reverse is interesting too, where what will you be willing to do? Like what amount of suck will you be willing to do? Because that often points to what you love. So like, as I walk through an airport and it's a delayed flight and I had to spend the night in Milwaukee and I don't have clean clothes and like whatever it is, I'm still like, this is amazing because I got to speak for 45 minutes at an event. So there's other things like when I'm doing digital marketing, the slightest inconvenience, I'm like, I hate it. This is so dumb. I don't want to do this. Other people have the reverse. They're like, I love trying to figure out the algorithm. That's something they care about. So I wrote down that idea because it's like, I don't know the idea yet. It's not formed, but I have this sneaking suspicion. There's this kind of counterintuitive way to figure out what you love based on how much difficult things or annoying things you do in order to do that. Like that's a really interesting way to show somebody their passion that I haven't heard somebody talk about. Like I haven't seen a lot of books go, you know, figure out what suck you put up with and then you'll know. Like, so that's what I'm taking notes on is little thing, but it could be a word choice like business days.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So we've got the idea backlog or the idea bank in your phone.
Yep.
Then you're pulling from that. And it sounds like creating kind of, okay, I'm sketching it out. Cause if I can't sketch it out simply, then it's, I probably haven't nailed the idea. Yeah. Then it sounds like maybe from there, writing it out analog style. And then, okay, that's fleshing out the content of the book. Oh, yeah. And then you said, as you enter it into the Word doc, then that's, all right, that's almost like your first edit where you're making it better. And then once you've got the book in the actual doc, printing it out so that you can mark it up kind of like high school English paper style.
Yeah, but like what, there's a lot that happens between the handwritten and the typed in. Because what will happen is I'll go, wow, this paragraph made a huge assumption that you didn't explain. So like I realize I'll find as I'm typing it, wait a second, you just left half the readers back.
Business days, what is
like,
that?
Like, and so I'll have to go, oh, it needs a paragraph. Or this sounds so woo-woo, and I'm not like a woo-woo guy, but like I'm getting better at listening to my body. So I used to write past where I was writing well. Like I would write and go like, you just got to write. But now like I can recognize, ooh, I'm making a lot of typos. I just took a lazy shortcut. Oh, like it's my body going, hey, we're tired. Like we've written enough today, or we need a break and a reset. And so sometimes in the handwritten version, I'll go, oh, I must've been tired. I took a real, like I ended it in a cheesy way because I couldn't figure out the real ending. And I was like, and then read the next paragraph. I'm like, that's good. Like, no, that's a shortcut. That's not good. And so a lot happens in that edit. And then I'll send chunks of the book as we talk, I know in a couple of weeks, I'm going to send 10 to 15,000 words to my editor. And the key there is I had a call with first. So I came up with a list of things I wanted to talk about. Here's where I'm going. Here's what I'm doing it. So then I pitched them, hey, just so you know, this is where I'm headed. This is why I'm excited. These are the steps. I'm deliberate about it. I'm working through it. And so I'm pitching him on the idea before he gets the 10 to 15 so that when he gets it, he goes, oh yeah, this is the thing he said he was going to do. And he did it. He figured it out. Or the key, one of the smartest things I've ever accidentally done is add a letter to chunks of copy I send. And I really didn't come up with it. When I say accidentally, I just saw somebody do it. I have this editor, Brian, and he would send me a letter explaining what he's sending. And it would be like 5 points. And dude, that is magic. Because what happens is you go, hey, editor, I want you to pay special attention to this. I really tried to balance the examples I was using. I felt like it was getting too many men and not enough female or whatever. Or I want you to pay attention to this story. Or, hey, I sent you a 7-point list. Two of them aren't strong. I can't figure out which are the two. So would you please, in this list that I've written about, you know, in chapter 4, take out your two weakest. Like, let me know what you think are your two weakest. And so I'm explaining it and it goes so much smoother versus just, hey, here's a chunk. You figure this out. Like, that doesn't help. I constantly look at this as sales. Like, you're constantly selling the idea and you want the editor to have the easiest job possible where they go, oh, I can see exactly where they're going. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And you also want them to know you worked hard. That's the thing. Like, so much of life, if I spend 30 minutes.
Why does that matter for your editor?
Because then they know what you put into it. Then they go, oh, they're really into this. Like, the danger of being prolific is people can think you're writing quickly and casually. And they go, oh, here comes some more ideas. It matters because then they can tell, like, you're all in. Like, you're the champion of this idea. Like, you have to be all in. And it's kind of like the little things you start to notice with successful people that, like, what they do. Like, when you go to a meeting with them, they have a page of notes already. They've already had some thoughts they've been thinking about. They don't show up and try to wing it because they're charismatic. When I sit down with somebody and they go, hey, I was really looking forward to this. I've already written down 5 questions I want to ask you. Here's the questions. That's a different experience than if somebody just shows up and wings it. So I'm always trying to go, I'm not going to wing this thing that's precious, which is writing a book. So if I can write a dope 5-point letter about it and go, hey, here's why I did it. This is where, and it tells them, it's another one of those signs. It's kind of like that old story of like Van Halen and the green M&Ms. They only did that so that they knew you took their contract seriously and read the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's another one of those signs of like, okay. And it's my job. I like that. I want to be a professional writer. And that's what a professional does. Like, a professional doesn't send a bunch of loose copy and go, you figure out.
Yeah. I agree with that. And I like the concept. I guess I'm trying to understand, in the context of sending that to your editor, is that more so you feel like it gives them the overarching thing of what you're looking for them to zoom in on? Is it more so you feel like they respect the process and then now they're putting more into it when they're editing? Like,
it makes their job easier and they can edit faster. They dial in right away. Like, it's kind of like, I mean, it's like a movie trailer. Like, why do we like movie trailers? It gets them excited about the content. We're like, dude, there's a thing I stumbled on. I think you're going to love this part. I can't wait to hear. Like, why do we have movie trailers? You could go, you don't just see the whole movie. Like, no, like the movie trailer. I always tell authors, you have two audiences, the publisher and the person who buys the book. You're selling to both people. And so, like, when it's like when something good happens related to the book, I email the publisher because they didn't see it and they're not supposed to. It's my job. So if I go sign, like Monday, I signed 365 copies of soundtracks. I posted that on social media as a thank you, like, so fun that the client did this, but copies for everybody. And then I emailed the team and said, hey, just wanted you to know I'm in Miami. It's early in the morning, whatever. I'm out here signing books. The book's doing great. Like, people are loving it. Thank you for creating an amazing product with me. I really appreciate it. That book came out 3 years ago. Those are those little things that, like, when people go, I want to do what you do, I'm like, by all means, I think it's the best job in the world. There's a lot of stuff, dude. There's a lot of stuff. So, and it's and again, it's another way for me to have gratitude for to say, like, look how this cover is popping. Like, you guys killed the cover. And it's 3 years later. Yeah. And like, it's another way for me to have gratitude to the publisher.
In some ways, it's like, I think you want to be where I'm at. Maybe not do what I've done. I want to be you. Let me, I got like 7 follow-up questions on this. And I got I got one follow-up question from like minute 3 of the interview. Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, he reached out to you. Did you reach out to him? Was this what you were saying?
He read one of my books. He read one of my books. He's a learner. He's a consummate learner. So he read Do-Over. Like, this is going to sound so this is going to sound so braggy. He carries a card in his pocket. He carries a card in his pocket with his four favorite books on it. And then there's a fifth one with a blank line and one of his four, and he gives it to players. So like, you play for Florida, you play for like Florida, you play for Georgia, and he mentors you a little bit. He'll go, hey, you got to read these books. And he has a card. And one of the books on the card is Do Over by John Acuff. So he really enjoyed Do Over. And so that's how we connected. And he was like, man. And then a cool moment that was just straight up God, it had nothing to do with me. He wrote me a handwritten thank you note for being on my podcast. And it was, he sent it the week Texas and Oklahoma joined the SEC, kind of a big week in the SEC. And that was him. And I told my wife, I was like, can you imagine a dude at his level still sends thank you notes? And she goes, oh, you got it backwards. He's at that level because he sends thank you notes. And I was like, oh. And so I told that story at Global Leadership Summit. And then I get off stage and go, you know, Greg Sankey is four rows in. He's sitting right there. He heard that story. So I got to honor him about that in front of thousands and thousands of people. So that was so we've become friends over the years, just like with text. He lives in Birmingham. I'm in Nashville. So if one of us goes through the city, he's just one of those guys. Again, I'm constantly thinking about what do people who have sustained long-term success do? Because like, I'm no longer interested in the man or woman who has like a YouTube channel that blows up for a year, or like somebody has one hot book and then you never hear from again. I'm really fascinated by people that are on a 20 or 30 year run. That's the hardest thing. Like I look at a guy like Craig Groeschel and I'm like, that he's still doing the thing at a high level, or Greg Sankey, you're still doing the thing at the high level. What are they consistently doing? And it seems like one of the things is they learn from other people. And my wife challenged me on that last night. She was like, you know, you're 12 years younger than Greg. Name the people 12 years younger than you that you're learning from. And I was like, ooh. Like I had to like.
Dang, your wife is just killing it, man. Yeah, she's just like, boom, boom.
Yeah,
boom.
She's the best. She's the best. And so like, and she was right. And so now I'm on this mission. I'm like, okay, who are these like mid 30s folks that I can talk to and learn from, because they know so many things I don't know. Like, how do I connect with them? You know, so that's what's fun to me about this job is you do get to meet people like and ask them questions.
Man, we got to bring Miss Acuff on the podcast. She living is, with a writer, all of the things that John gets credit for
dude, you're not. Dude. You know what she said last night? This is just us on the porch. She goes, you know, social media is like you're a serf, you're a peasant back in like medieval times. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, well, you don't own the land that you're working on. They can kick you off the land anytime they want, and you exist only for the king's pleasure, the algorithm. So you are a peasant. Like, it's fun to think. I'm building my YouTube empire. They can breathe and you're gone. I'm building my Instagram empire. They can breathe and you're gone. You own nothing. You are a social media serf. And I was like, oh, I've never thought about it that way. You better believe I'm going to like slide that into a book somewhere. And I put my wife said every time a story I was sharing was something she came up with, it would be 1,000 times. So yeah, I give her as much credit as I can. She's brilliant and hilarious.
That's awesome.
I hope you're loving this episode so far. So if you're serious about writing and publishing your book, we would love to chat with you and help create a custom plan. All right. So all you need to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, schedule a 45-minute consultation with one of the experts on my team. All right, let's implement what you're learning in this episode and let's see how we can help with your book. Go to selfpublishing.com/schedule.
What, the fifth slot on the card, is that for?
That's for a current book. So he's like, something he's reading then. So he might like, he loved Strength to Strength. I gave him this book, Strength to Strength by Albert Brook. That's the other thing I find like people that I look up to do, they trade books. They give books to each other. They're like, hey, they're consummate learners. So yeah, he might go, okay, this is a current book that I'm reading that I wanted to, you know, that I'm interested in. He's just doing a million things like that. I saw him at the SEC basketball tournament. I went and I mentioned thank you notes and he had a stack of them in his pocket. So during timeouts, he's over there on the sideline writing thank you notes. And I'm like, this guy is doing it, dude. He's doing thing.
Yeah. It's very impressive. It's very, very, very impressive what he's done with SEC. I mean, I'm a Clemson guy. So ACC, so naturally I have like kind of a little bit of disdain for him and that conference, but you can't help but respect it. I mean, it's incredible.
They're on a different level. They're like the Taylor Swift of football conferences right now. They're at a different level. Like them and the Big Ten are just doing things differently.
It's impressive. Hey, how are you so funny? like, I know this is like, you probably just, this is not like a just thing that you can say on a podcast, but like, as it relates to your creative process, yeah. I think something that makes you really unique is I'll see something on Twitter or LinkedIn or what, and I'm doubled over. I mean, he's like, what are you laughing at? I'm like, oh, this John A. Clough thing. Like, it's so funny. Oh, thanks, man. Like, what is there any, like, what is your process for coming up with quippy, funny things like that?
I'd say I usually add it later. So like, I first get the idea. I just want the bare bones idea. So the bare bones idea might be, I think if you looked at the list of things you do that suck in order to do the good thing, you might realize how much you love the good. That's the idea. Those aren't the right words. And then like, then I'll write it out and then I'll go, how can this be funny? How could this be enjoyable? How could, what's a funny story about this? Like, dude, I put a story in the new book. So we did a teen version of All It Takes Is a Goal. So after Soundtracks came out, a bunch of parents were like, do you have a teen version of Soundtracks? We didn't. My two daughters helped me write one. So we're doing another teen version of my books, All It Takes Is a Goal. I put a story in there that I'd never put into a book about when I was a ninth grader. My biology teacher said, if we found a road-killed animal and got bugs to eat all the whatever flesh off and then rebuilt the skeleton, he would give us bonus point. And I was failing biology. And I was like, that sounds easier than studying. I should fry. So dude, for like a month, every time I was driving, I didn't have a license. I'd tell my parents, pull over. I think there's a dead animal. I finally found one. I couldn't tell what it was because it was so smushed. And then I put it in a Tupperware in my backyard, forgot about it. It rained. It like eventually was just this like disgusting stew. And the absurdity of me thinking, probably rebuild a skeleton of an animal. I could probably do that pretty, how hard can that be? Like it was insane that I even entertained that for a second, never mind looked for dead animals for a month. And so like, that's a story that I know in a book will be really funny. It'll serve the illustration I'm trying to make. And so like, that's the kind of thing I'm doing. Or I try to like, part of my humor is like, I'm trying to guess what people are thinking so I can make a joke of it. And so like, I'm going, okay, they're going to be thinking this and I want to be in on the conversation too. So if I say this, they'll be surprised. And then like, dude, some of it is I use the humor to say things that would be hard to hear otherwise. So like, I'll give you an example of that, of how I do that style. People, I'm a very negative person by nature, but I practice positivity. And sometimes people are surprised by that. And I tell them about all the things I do to be positive because it's the ROI on positivity is better than the ROI on negativity. And then I'll go and I meet people sometimes. They'll say, oh, I'm negative. And I'll say, well, tell me about your day. And they'll be like, well, I drove home from work and on the drive home, I listened to a podcast called Brutal Unsolved Crimes in the City You Live In. And then I fell asleep that night to a documentary called People Who Look Like You Getting Murdered. It's a new special on Netflix. It's weird that I feel negative. I'm like, it's not weird. It's not weird at all. Like you fed yourself, like you watched the Jeffrey Dahmer documentary about somebody who ate humans. Like don't then go, I had the weirdest dreams last night. I don't know what could it be. Like, of course you're practicing negativity. Like you're guzzling negativity. And so that might be hard to hear unless I exaggerate it with humor. Like clearly there's no podcast called Brutal Unsolved Crimes in Your City, but we all know where, like, I'm making fun of kind of a meme of like, on today's podcast episode, we found somebody who got their throat, you know, and the cops did nothing. Listen to this podcast. And you're like, it's pretty negative. Like, so at the end of the story, the throat cutter's just out there cutting through. Like, that sounds bad. So I'll use humor to exaggerate it. So it's easy to see and it's easy to accept. Oh man, he's right. Like I wouldn't do that. Like, why do I do that? Like, why am I okay with that? Like, okay, that's, you know, or like, I have this line in one of my speeches that says, you're the most persuasive person you've ever met. And that's a good line because it's counterintuitive. Like the idea of you're meeting you, but you are the most persuasive person you've ever met because every bad decision you've ever done, first you talked yourself into it. Mm-hmm. First you were like, we should do that. That's going to work out. That'll be great. And so I joke about that. And then I say, like, have you ever eaten a whole snack bag of something and then realized at the end of it that it said share size on it on the outside? I shared that with me. Or like party size, party of one. You're like, And everybody's, that's a human experience that I'm joking about. Or then I'll go, have you ever stayed up later than you wanted to because you told yourself, I'll watch one Instagram video, one YouTube video. And everybody's done that. And I'll go, and then I'll tell a true story myself. I'll say, a couple of weeks ago, I stayed up till 1 a.m. watching videos about Singapore's number one stingray breeder. And I'll go, I'm not even in the market for a manta ray. And that's a funny statement. Like, I'm not in the market for a manta ray. No one's ever seen those words together in the same sentence. Yeah. And they go, and like, that's a funny, and I've, and so like that, but again, I'm exaggerating the point of like, we talked ourselves into staying up to 1 a.m. If I say it that way, like that's clinical, it's boring. But if I say like, I'm not even in the market for a manta ray, like that, like people are like, yeah, like, why did you watch that? Why were you like, I got to figure out what this guy's doing with these stingrays. How is he breeding them so successfully? It's got to be a difficult process. You know, like whatever, like they can start laughing along with me. That's how I use humor.
Got it. Have you ever done comedy or improv or anything like that?
Yeah, I did two. It was awesome. It was super fun. I did two nights at Zany's, sold out. Zany's is the largest comedy club in Nashville. And that was, I guess, maybe about 5 years ago. Super fun, super hard. Gave me great respect, even more.
Was just a one-off.
Yeah, I just did. I just wanted to try it, see if I could do it. And they sold out in 24 hours. It was awesome. Bunch of people came out for it. But it gave me even more respect for comedians, and I already have a ton of respect. I already have like immense respect for them. But it's super hard because in a speech, there's highs and lows. In comedy, it's mostly highs. So like in a speech, I'm like, we're ramping up. It's a funny joke. Here's a story about something that's kind of serious. We're ramping up. Here's a funny. With comedy, it's
go, it's go, gotta go, be go, hitting. Yeah. Yeah.
It's go, funny, go, go,
funny,
go, go, go.
Funny, funny. Yeah.
And so that was a super, it took me 3 months to write 60 minutes. Easy.
Oh, wow. You alluded to this before our interview. You said you're kind of getting back to your roots and in a writing style that only you can do. And so I think this weaves together a couple questions that I had for you, which was, A, why do you think Soundtracks has done so well? And it kind of weaves in some of the humor stuff. But it seems like that book's done really well. You said before the interview, like, hey, I feel like I was a little too just clinical. And maybe that's not the word that you use, but just like,
well, kind of straightforward. Well, some books I can be straightforward and if I'm not careful, I can be really practical. And so that's where the humor is helpful for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is your question, how do I like...
Well, why do you think Soundtracks sold so well? And does that relate to how you kind of mentioned to me before the interview started, like you're getting back to who you feel like is uniquely you, like writing style wise?
Yeah, I think the challenge for writers is we always talk about finding our voice. We don't talk enough about keeping our voice. And so like, it's not, finding it is not, it's not as hard to me as keeping it. Your voice is very slippery, like, cause you'll get feedback and then you'll be like, well, I guess I could like, or hey, people really like this. And then I could, and then like, it's hard to keep it. So for me, that's always the tension is like, how do I keep it? How do I not write? How do I not write Gary V's next? Because I read Gary V's book and he's really bombastic. And how do I not, like, you're constantly trying to not put on somebody else's voice. That's the challenge for me as a writer. And so I think part of the reason Soundtracks was the timing. The timing was accidental. I can't take any credit of that. It came out, it wasn't easy to tour on it, obviously, because it was the pandemic, but it came out at a time where everybody was overthinking. 2020 was catnip for overthinking. So if you weren't before, the other thing that worked for Soundtracks is that it hit, the title worked really, really well. Because if I had named it Voices, no dude would buy it. If I named it Inner Voices, no dude would pick that book up. Like, there's no way. Like, people go, nah, like, but Soundtracks is very, like, everybody can go, oh yeah, I do have a soundtrack. Oh yeah, it makes sense. Like, it's a really approachable word. So I think that's one of the things that I try to do with my books is I'm like, okay, how is the audience going to react to this? How's a corporate audience going to react to this? How do I, have I seen a million books about overthinking, or have they had this position? What's my angle on it? Like the book I'm writing right now about anxiety, my angle is going to be like, it's great. Like it's, you can do great. You can do great things with it. Cause most books are like, you can end it the right four steps. You can end it. I'm like, no, you can't. Like, you can't stop it. And why? Like, it's allowed me, all I've done is figured out how to channel my anxiety into creativity. And now I have 10 books and I'm going to have 10 more because I'm a very anxious person. And that'll be a really interesting hook, I hope, because I think sometimes when you've written a couple books, people think you've got it all together. And so I think when I go like, I do not, here's an anxious situation, I think people will get a kick out of that and will see themselves and are willing. I try to write books people can't say no to. So if I say to people, I wrote a book called Finish. It's about perfectionism. Like, Is it ever hard for you to finish the things you start? Who says no to that? Nobody goes, no, I'm 100 for 100. I've never started a hobby and stopped it. No, what are you talking about? If I say, I wrote a book about overthinking, do you ever overthink? Nobody goes, really, I don't. I use exactly the right amount of thoughts. And my spouse does too. No, instead they go, oh, I need that book, or my husband needs that book, my wife needs that book. So that's when I know I've got a good topic. And I think anxiety and bravery are going to be an interesting, because I think the world's only getting more anxious. So I don't know when people will ever not need, I think that it's going to, same with overthinking. I think they'll continue to need it.
That's good. It's a great hook, great topic. And guys, if you want to listen, you can go back to episode 98. We did a full breakdown on the behind the scenes of the launch of Soundtracks. Yeah. We talked about launching the book using a challenge. Like, there's a bunch of good stuff there. I'm going to go lightning round with a few questions, John, before you wrap up. I guess, first off, why are you still traditionally publishing? Like, are you just getting fat advances and just like big book deals, or what's the why behind that?
Yeah. It's the advances work very well. I would say the other reason is I really like the team. Like, I love the team. The team I have at Baker is fantastic. Like, the team I had at Penguin was awesome too. So I've been fortunate to be with teams. Like, it'd be one thing if I was able to say, well, you know what? Here's the thing. I've been burned a couple times, publishing, whatever. I can't say that. I've got great teams that are quick, that challenge me, that make me better, and are fast. Like, an example of that would be, so Soundtracks comes out. We have all these parents go, hey, do you have a teen version? And Baker reacts. We get a new product out pretty quickly. Like, they weren't like, hey, yeah, in 4 years, like, they were like, no, let's capture this momentum. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. Here's what we can do. So it's funny. I almost feel bad when I talk to other authors, because I'll go, man, my publisher's the worst. They're so, I go, oh man, that sounds terrible. And I'm like, man, but also I'm maintaining that relationship too.
Right.
Like, I'm not there to be served. That's one of the lessons. I keep learning lessons about ego in my own life. And one of the things is, like, if I don't show up as the talent, but I show up to serve, it's a lot better relationship. Same with, like, public speaking changed for me when I went from being a performer into somebody serving. Like, I'm serving the audience. Like, I'm there 1 hour. The event planner is there all year. I want her to look like a rock star. I tell them before I speak, my three goals. One, your phone blows up during the talk. I want you getting text messages from your boss that says, hey, Sheila, this is way to put on this event. This keynote is exactly what we needed. Number two, I want the audience to go, he understands me at taking the time. Audiences can tell when a speaker shows up with one speech and gives it, whether you're a mom blogger or a plumber. And then three, the one that I really like is, I want the sound team to be engaged. Because if I can make the jaded dude who runs the board at the JW Marriott, who's heard every speech and seen every PowerPoint, if I can make that guy laugh and lean in, the rest of the audience is dying. Like, so I am always like, so I know, like, I stepped off the stage at an event the other day and the sound guy was like, I bought your book while you're talking, man. I can't wait to read it. That, then I know, like, okay, if the guy who's working the event goes, wait a sec, I got to figure out these soundtracks. I got some of those. Like, then I know the rest of the audience who's an attendee is having a super fun time, and I've served them well.
Cool. I like that. So making the event planner look good, feels like I'm talking to them and isn't just a canned talk, and then the sound guy's engaged. Are you, on the speaking side of things, are you basically every new book, are you creating a new talk?
Yep.
And that is what you're kind of going around?
Multiple talks, yeah. So, I mean, so I gave a Soundtracks talk twice this week, and that book came out 4 years ago. From a nonfiction perspective, I don't know how any human sells books without speaking gig. Selling books is hard, dude. Like, it's hard. There's so many books. People are super distracted. Like, it's hard. And so for me, the two work really well together. And I feel really fortunate that I meet some other authors that understandably, like, I don't want to be on stage. It doesn't make me comfortable. And I love it. It's so fun to me. So yeah, I usually do 1 to 2 keynotes per book.
Okay. 1 to 2 keynotes that you'll create per book. Yep. What, how many times are you speaking a year typically?
40 to 50.
And are those gigs mostly coming inbound, or they mostly come, like, how do you book most of those gigs?
Well, I have a form on my website. So there are people that fill out, like, an availability form. But I have a speakers bureau I've worked with for 10 years here in Nashville where I am. So a lot of them come through there, or relationships. Somebody will see me at a different event and then book, like the one I did, this one of the ones I did this week, they said, oh, we saw you at this other event. 2 years ago. And so sometimes it's compounding that way. Like the more you're out there, the more you're out there.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And is it mostly corporate?
I would say 97% corporate and then maybe 3% church. Like I'll speak for my church once a year or once every other year, but it's 97% corporate.
Okay. And that, and is that the main, I'm assuming that's the main business model is on the speaking side of things. You've got some online stuff and then the books. Yeah. That's kind of like, that's the model.
Well, think about it this way. Like at this point, I'm 12 years in, 13, 14 years into speaking. So I'm very aware that anyone can start an online something tomorrow. Anyone. But they can't have Range Rover them to speak debut of their new vehicle. They can't be like, hey, Range Rover, why don't you go ahead? I'm going to like, at that event followed Wycliffe Jean. So like, you can't, like, if you were like, I want to be a speaker, I'm just going to call up Range Rover and be like, hey, like that relationship was the byproduct 10 years of doing the stuff. Like, and so I'm aware that in the same way that I use humor, because I think a lot of people don't. And so like, I know I'll never out research Jim Collins. He's amazing at that. But like, there's a lot of people that I can be really, I can be really funny. And then same with speaking at this point, because I've been doing it so long, there's definitely a ton of people that do it. Don't get me wrong, but it's a harder road. It's a steeper climb. If you were like, well, I want to do exactly that. Like, amen, go for it. Where like some of the online stuff I do, it's so anyone can sell anything. Even like, you know, like you can be writing a parenting book and you have a toddler and you're like, all you've done so far is protect. Like when you have a 2-year-old, you haven't even parented yet. You've protected. And like, now that I've got an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old, I might feel kind of comfortable writing a parenting book because I'm like, oh man, like we're not perfect. I'm not an expert by any means, but man, I got 2 decades to talk about what we did deliberately, what things work, which things didn't. Maybe I'll write that. But the challenge with like online stuff is like anybody can, you know, pop up and be like, I'm an expert in this. And then like, I had a professor tell me, it was so fascinating the way he said it. And I wrote it down in my idea notes. He said, there's a lot of people who feel imposter syndrome, and that's because they should. He said they are. He said because they are imposters. So, and that opened me up to, oh, he's right. He's right. Some people should feel that. That's appropriate. You're selling something you're not qualified to sell or do. That, like, that's actually your heart. That's not imposter syndrome. That's your heart going, hey, I don't know if we should take that money from that person. We don't know what we're doing. Like, I don't, like, what are we? And you'll see people sell that. They'll go, just look up what's trending, create a product. And like, you're not an expert at that. And even if you can't sell it, it's going to be quick. It's not a, so sometimes it's again, like I like to grow my brand over time. Like where there's a lot of things I have to say no to, because I'm like, it's outside of what I do. I wouldn't feel good about that. It's not what I like to talk about, just because I could make a little money off it. I think it would dent the brand more than it would help the brand. So I think that's part of why I love public speaking, is that I've spent a long time doing it and I want to even longer. The crazy thing is people tell me, they'll be like, man, you got to get off the road. Like it's high. This is the phrase people tell me all the time. They're like, it's high paid manual labor. Like you got to get off the road, which is like, if I said to your brother, man, you got to stop playing live concerts. You got to stop going to Red Rocks, man. If you could just stay home and never, like, obviously the road is challenging in its own way, but the whole point of a musician learning the guitar was to play in front of people. That was the joy. So like, I don't want to get off the stage. I like, like nobody's like, oh man, I can't wait to go through the Baltimore airport or whatever. Man, I love doing it. Like that's I don't like the idea of like, oh, you should get off the road. Like, no, I'm having a blast, dude. I want to do it like with the right clients. I don't do 100 events a year. I'm like, I know my limits. Like I'm pretty serious about like, that's too many gigs. So it's not, you know, for me, I always think about that. Like, but that's why I love speaking. There's so many reasons that I think it's a really fun business model.
That's cool, man. That's really cool. Well, I got dozens more questions, but we'll save them for next time.
Yeah, third episode.
Maybe 2 years from now, you probably have published a couple more books.
I'm trying.
We have Miss Acuff on the show by then.
You published like 900 this week. You're telling me I'm prolific. Chandler Bolton team are just getting books out into the world.
Oh, man. Well, John, where can people go to find out more about you, to buy your books, all the stuff?
So the books are available anywhere books are sold. The latest one is All It Takes a Goal. And I read the audiobook and it's got 10 bonus stories. There's a free add bonus stories to your audiobook if you get to record one, because a lot of times people buy both versions. And that's a really fun way to super serve. So I wrote 10 separate stories that are only in the audiobook. Podcast is All It Takes a Goal. And website's johnacuff.com. And I'm John Acuff on Twitter and Instagram and all the stuff.
And follow him if you want to laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. High bar.
And learn all at the same time.
I'm trying. I'm out here. I'm dancing. I'm tap dancing out here, Chandler. Babies.
Or on LinkedIn. Or on LinkedIn if you want to see videos of him on a walk or on a run.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll get to see my neighborhood. If you want to see a very normal suburban neighborhood and a sweaty man yelling at a camera, that's me. That's me.
Oh, John, you're the man. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you'd be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode helpful. I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast, wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right, reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode helpful. All right, number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast, wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right. Reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.